What if people from opposite sides of the political divide in America came together to have hard conversations with curiosity and open minds? Voters are frustrated, worried, and angry with their leaders and ashamed of how our political process works these days. I, for one, am one of those voters. How can we bridge what seems to be that divide, all that divides us? Hello, I'm Gina Murphy Darling, and this is Impact Earth, Mindful Living. Thanks so much for listening. We're going to be talking about restoring functionality and civility in American politics. I personally believe this might be one of the most important shows we have ever done on our platform, and I hope when it's over that all of you agree with me. As a country, we are a house divided. We are a country where the political divide has widened to a point some might consider beyond repair. There really are days that I think that. But that statement begs the question, is that the truth? Or is that what mainstream media outlets would like us to believe in who are great at feeding that fire every single day? I, for one, don't know the answer, which is why I am both honored and thrilled to have with us someone who lives to build bridges, to find common ground, to help us move forward as the great nation of us that many of us believe in, and we believe that it's in great jeopardy on many levels. I'm very excited to welcome our in-studio guest, Dr. Carolyn Lukensmeyer, Executive Director Emerita, National Institute for Civil Discourse, an organization that works to reduce political dysfunction and incivility in our political system. And I dare say, Carolyn, you will have a lot of work to do for a very long time. I have to say that. Well, probably blushing a little bit. As a leader in the field of deliberative democracy, Carolyn works to restore our democracy to reflect the intended vision of our founding fathers, which, from my perspective, has to be a heavy lift at this time in our country. So, Carolyn, it's wonderful to finally have you here from when I first heard you speak. And I meant every word I said. We need you. We need the Institute because it's not pretty out there. We are a house divided, and I want America to be something we're all proud of again, and you have some pieces of information that are hopeful. So I think the most helpful thing would be to give us the big picture of the Institute, its history, and just let us know what your work is all about.
Well, Gina, thank you so much for having me. It's indeed an honor and a pleasure to be with you. Tucson played a very significant role in the trail that we have been able to create over the last 7 years. When the mass shooting happened on January 8th, 2011, in which, as all your listeners know, 6 people died and 13 were seriously wounded, including Representative Gabby Giffords, the community and the university came together 10 days after the memorial service and said, "We have to create something good to come out of this tragedy." As you know, Gabby was loved for her bipartisan work in the Arizona State Legislature. When she went on to go to the House of Representatives, she had exactly the same reputation, both that she had friends on both sides of the aisle. She's one of the people that started the women's softball team in the House of Representatives. So this ability to commit to how do we get people to really work across the aisle in a meaningful way was one of the central pieces of what we wanted to accomplish. When I took over the leadership of it in July of 2012, we focused both on how we could work with elected officials, and we did that at 2 levels, in the House of Representatives and in state legislatures across the country. We also looked at, because once 2016 election happened, we understood that this divide now was not just in our politics. It was around our family dinner tables. It was in the places where we pray. It was in where we work. So we knew we had to add a significant program to engage we the people around how we can talk and listen to one another. But let me talk first in terms of our work in Congress, because something very exciting is happening that most Americans know nothing about because these kinds of stories aren't covered.
They don't make the news at night.
They do not.
Maybe we can get you on Lester Holt. He seems to carry some more news than just the other 3 networks that everybody listens to.
So in 2018, after that year, when so many new freshmen came into the House of Representatives, Nancy Pelosi worked with them to create something called the Select Committee on the Modernization of Congress. It's a relatively small committee, about 12 members. It's chaired by Derek Kilmer, a Democrat from Washington, and Tom Graves, a Republican from Georgia. And
wow.
The 12 people, six and six, are all members of Congress dedicated to reinstilling the capacity for the House of Representatives to really work. One of the members of that committee is Emmanuel Cleaver, a longtime congressman from Kansas City, Missouri. In 2012, Emmanuel Cleaver and a Republican, Kay Granger from Fort Worth, Texas, invited the National Institute for Civil Discourse to develop a project called a Working Group for a Working Congress. This was way back in 2012. We had a great program that John Boehner embraced, that Nancy Pelosi embraced, but Eric Cantor, who was the majority leader and therefore managed the committees in Congress at that time, kept putting us off and putting us off and finally just undercut the effort. Well, here we are in 2019, and a week ago Thursday, there was a hearing of the Select Committee focused entirely on civility. And in that hearing, Keith Allred, the current executive director of the National Institute for Civil Discourse, was one of the key people to testify. And several of the people who testified put out very practical ideas about how Congress could work better together. For example, when the new freshmen come in, traditionally, all the orientation was done with everyone who came in. After Newt Gingrich, the orientations began to be split. Republicans went through one orientation, and Democrats went through a different. So one of the recommendations is to, again, have the freshmen, as they call themselves, all go through orientation together. Another one is to change the schedule so that people actually have more time for social connection, to really develop relationships. But the critical variable relative to the Institute is this idea of reestablishing the Working Group for a Working Congress is now on the table. The idea is to work with committees in Congress. So it might be the Transportation Committee, the Agriculture Committee, the Financial Services Committee. What we would do is work where a committee chair and a ranking member and at least two-thirds of the members of the committee say, we want to make this work better. So we would actually work with them outside of Congress for probably 2 days in which they would reestablish how do we want to work together. How do we want to treat the members who come in and testify, members of the public who come in and testify in hearings? And what pieces of legislation do we want to get on the floor of the House with real bipartisan support? Now, the current dilemmas with impeachment will probably slow down what was moving very fast. But the bottom line is this group, this select committee, is absolutely committed to taking some of these recommendations forward.
I have to say that caring very, very deeply about this subject, it's one of the things that gives me hope. You don't really hear much good news in mainstream media, and I know it's there. I know that everybody in Washington can't be a two-headed monster. I know that there are Republicans and Democrats that want to work together. We don't hear about it. You can't even search for it because it's not there. And people are hiding. People are afraid to speak up. So something like this, just the fact of separating Republicans from Democrats, there's no good that can come from that kind of decision. So that gives me hope. And you're right about like Gabby wanting to have a softball team. I remember when I worked a lot more with Washington when I was the head of the refugee program for the state of Arizona. It blew me away. I mean, Dennis DeConcini worked with everyone. John McCain worked with everyone. We saw that. Mo Udall, Barry Goldwater. I mean, the list goes on. It was civility and it was agreement to disagree and compromise.
And many members of Congress want to do that today, which isn't visible to the American public.
At all.
And leadership has really set the norm of continuing the divisiveness. But if listeners would like to look at the civility hearing, they could go to YouTube and just type in Select Committee on the Modernization of Congress and the civility hearing that was held last Thursday.
And we have the kind of listeners that will. I mean, they're very dedicated
do.
Group.
I know you
seriously.
Do.
So I want to talk about a lot of the programs, but what a better, and I just like, I feel like pressing pause and having a moment of silence or something for this good news, because it really, it's like, it's very jarring. Oh, there is hope.
Well, let me also talk about what we're doing in state legislatures, because there we've been at it seriously for 6 years and have made tremendous progress. Our program is called Next Generation. It's led by a former member of the House of Representatives of Ohio, and the seed idea of it was put together with a Democrat and Republican, again, one from Ohio, one from Iowa. We go into a state legislature, and we ask that leadership support the idea, and about the same number of Republicans and Democrats as are in that state legislature have to participate, and that they agree to implement some action steps. We've now worked in 16 states. More than 1,000 members of state legislature are part of our national network of state legislators committed to real collaboration. My favorite story, because people always want to know, so what impact does this have?
Yeah, where's the story? Tell us a story.
So the workshop they go through is titled Building Trust Through Civil Discourse. And Gina, basically what we do is we set up the circumstances so that they can again meet each other as people, as human beings, learn something about what motivated them to run for public office. And it's when you observe this, it's just like kind of scales falling from their eyes. Oh, I only thought of you as a liberal Democrat or a conservative, and they just really get reconnected. So Maine is a state we've worked in for quite a long time. In fact, there's a foundation in Maine that ensures that every new legislature that comes in goes through our training. And this last January, when the new session began, they had had some issues in the previous session that things got pretty divided again. So the president of the Senate, a man named Troy Jackson, a Republican, and the Speaker of the House, a woman named Sarah Gideon, a Democrat, got together and said, we have to do something to reestablish the kind of comity that we had for quite some time. They did a very simple structural change. Sometimes something very simple can be very radical. What they did was they changed the seating chart. So instead of all the R's on one side of the aisle and all the D's on the other, which is where that famous phrase came from, the seating chart they put out was RD, 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 RD. And one other level of the sophistication, like many states in the country, some of the biggest issues in Maine that they struggle with are the urban-rural divide. So if you're from Augusta, one of the larger metropolitan areas, you probably found yourself sitting next to a representative from Aroostook County, which is way up on the Canadian border. There are more trees than people there. But so that not only were they RD mixed, but they were urban-rural mixed. And really excellent things have come from this. The Boston Globe has written a lovely story about it. NPR has interviewed many members of the legislature. So those are the kind of examples we like to give of 2 days commitment, Republicans and Democrats sitting in a room together, getting to know each other and reestablishing person-to-person relationships can turn into significant action.
And you know what I love? I love when really good things come together on the show just kind of naturally in the flow, because I pulled a quote that I read from either your website or some of the written material I had, and it was, what a testimonial. It was Brent Hill, the Idaho Senate President Pro Tem, after he went to Next Generation training, and it's really worth it to read it, especially after what you said, and what a great story. The forum provided to be both enlightening and constructive. Enlightening in that we learned more about each other as legislators and people. Constructive in that we learned that civil discourse does not mean abandoning one's principles. Rather, it means listening respectfully to those with whom we disagree while advocating with our own beliefs and principles in a respectful manner, an approach that, when employed, has improved and strengthened our process. And to me, it tells me that's all about mindset, about what the mindset is. And I, in my journey as Mrs. Green, I think I told you off air, I'm obsessed with wolves and the preservation of the wolves and the vilification of wolves. And you can see a lot of that. I mean, and it's a very vicious disagreement, but you can see when higher road people come together to find what is the common ground, you can get ranchers and farmers and conservationists and the wolf watchers together to see what we can do. It doesn't work in every state and every time, but it's to me, it's about hope. So it's giving a picture of the future.
Fundamentally, the first step is getting us out of these silos where we've decided that if you're a conservative and I'm a liberal or vice versa, we've been starting to make judgments of each other that isn't just a difference in political view. It's actually as if I'm morally superior to you. And that's the kind of messaging that we're seeing constantly in the media. And what's to me the most hopeful, Gina, is when, whether it's members of the media, members of legislatures, or just ordinary Americans, when you create a circumstance in which they feel safe and when you have a good structure for them to participate with each other, they very quickly leave their corners and really come together in a different level of respect. People want to be connected. We're very social beings. This is not natural what we're going through right now in the country. So one of the forces that's on our side is that when we can bring people together, it really makes a difference.
And I heard a phrase thrown around lately about, you know, it's called compassion fatigue. Well, there's another kind of fatigue, and it's the political talking fatigue or whatever. And when you talk about that and civility and common ground, I have biology about it because I have become one of those people that doesn't want to be one of those people, but I find myself there are triggers and we need tools. People that I think are, sometimes I think I am morally superior to that person who voiced that opinion, and I don't want to be that person. I don't want to be that person about judgment, but you need tools because I'm pretty strong in my beliefs and what I think is right, and sometimes I wonder, how come that makes me a liberal? That's not a liberal, that's a humanitarian. So those are the kinds of things you help people through those conversations, because we could use it a lot around this country.
Well, Gina, that's a perfect lead-in to another major program of the Institute called Revive Civility. And we created this program because in the middle of the presidential election in 2016, even in the Republican primary, we began to get thousands of messages, social media, emails, even phone calls, in which people of all stripes, this was red states, blue states, purple states, I'm ashamed, I'm angry, I'm frustrated at the state of our political discourse. So the verb they used about how they felt about it was always strong emotions, but very different. But the end of the message is almost always the same. I felt like I could almost see them on the other side of the screen or on the phone, just shrugging their shoulders or throwing up their hands.
Right.
But what can we do? So that really pushed us to think about that and to work with people, try some focus groups, test some things out. So now we do a tremendous number of processes, one-on-one, small groups, community meetings, 400 or 500 people, sometimes in a faith-based organization, where it's the same principle as I just described with the legislators. How do we create a safe space for people to listen for understanding only? So let's say we're talking about the wall. Very, very difficult conversation here at home in Arizona. But what we do is first have people listen. Why do you hold the view about the wall that you do? What in your life experience has brought you to believe this? What in my life experience has brought me to believe this? And the whole goal, not to influence each other one iota, but to listen for understanding. And what happens to people is just exactly what you said. Something that person A says triggers person B. I don't agree with the facts that you just said. I completely think your point of view on that. So what we teach people is what they can do when they are triggered to slow it down and continue the listening for understanding. One step is just to take a deep breath. Just pause, which then literally starts a different process in your brain around the trigger that got started off.
Right, right.
Pardon my... The second thing we tell people to do is just keep asking questions. Why do you believe that? Where did you hear that information? What we find is when people have this experience, it increases their confidence to then actually have a discussion about the issue, whether that's the wall, whether that's tax reform, and they're then capable of having that discussion in a different way. More curiosity, less judgment, more openness to actually, well, maybe I need to learn something about this as well.
And sometimes more, and it's probably inferred, but understanding, because I've been to a couple of the red-blue conversations, training, and it was a mother and a daughter in our group, and the mother was a Republican and the daughter was a Democrat. And I sat there and I said to them, I don't know how this works in your family because it doesn't work too well for me. And when it comes to the wall, there were things that she shared that I had not thought about. I'm plenty far away that it's not really a big threat to me, but if I had a farm down on the border, I might feel a little differently. And then where do we go from there? Because then I think, well, if you build that wall, all of the paths from the Sky Islands, all those animals won't be able to get through. So there's another conversation, which maybe they didn't think about. Yeah. It's like, oh, we're going to be keeping out things that are really good for our environment and our planet. So I see it. When you talk about it, I see it. And you're right. Sometimes when I'm just about to put both feet in my mouth, I remember to take a deep breath. And it does help. It's a tool. It's really a tool. So I wanted, there's a couple of really more exciting things we want to talk about, but I don't want to forget to talk about the University of Arizona's DC Center. That's part of the U of A's 2018 strategic plan. From where I sit, President Robbins, we finally have a president of the University of Arizona who cares about climate change. So that, of course, is a sweet spot for me. But he's doing other innovative things from what I can see and hear and observe. So tell us about this model center that's happening.
Well, it's very exciting. And the whole of the University of Arizona community and Tucson should be thrilled with President Robbins' leadership on this issue and many others.
I am.
It was a surprise to me when I took this position how little presence the University of Arizona had in Washington, D.C. It was much less visible in terms of many other schools had buildings, had programs, and President Robbins recognized this immediately. So probably March of 2020, all the functions that are in Washington, D.C., so government relations, research and development, alumni relations, NICD, and we're very both humbled and proud that President Robbins calls us the crown jewel of the University of Arizona in D.C.
As well he should after I learned about all of your work, and I mean that. You know that I was blown away. I pounced on you when you spoke at the Salon Series. It's like, I'm getting to her first.
And you did. So all of us will be moving into a lovely building on Pennsylvania Avenue. We'll share office space. We will actually have a studio in that building to do media events, right? Like exactly what you
right,
and I are
right.
doing here today. And we're just very, very thrilled about it. And there's no question, but what that will do is raise the profile of the University of Arizona, because there needs to be a gathering place. You know, these functions all were
it's
in D.C.
It's a presence.
Exactly.
Yes.
That's exactly the right
word.
And
having you there, that makes my heart sing, because it elevates the presence of your institute as well. I mean, to me it does. There we are on Pennsylvania Avenue. So I think that's a really bold move that's for the greater good.
No question about it. Just hats off to President Robbins.
We should ring a bell. So now, very exciting, the Divided We Fall docuseries. I want to know what this series is about and what message to ordinary Americans wrestling with what it means to be an American in today's world means. Tell us about this series.
Well, Gina, this grew out of the work we did in Revive Civility that we were talking about, where we know when you bring people face-to-face and set up the right conditions, 75 to 80% of Americans respond very quickly. But in the world we're living in, you know, last year alone, we reached about 60,000 Americans in that process. But when you have presidents' tweets that are 12 an hour, and when you have mass media only telling us about all of the negative things, the question facing us is, how can we go to scale? And that's where Divided We Fall came from.
Yes.
So the notion is to create video that you could watch on television, stream on your device, where, however you track video. We've filmed two groups of people, small groups intentionally. We did a group of Generation X around Boston, and we really dealt with the divide that became so obvious in the election. So of the 12 people, six of them were strong, strong Trump supporters, and six of them were very, very anti-Trump. Now, when they came together and worked with us for a weekend, we knew who everyone was, but we didn't allow them or we didn't invite them to introduce themselves that way again. We started with, who are we as people? So by the time we got into the political discussions, there were already connections amongst them as human beings. The second group of people we did was a very diverse group of millennials around the Chicago-Milwaukee area. And the notion is, the video episodes that we're creating from the authentic experience these people went through, we will now be sharing on a video platform. We're in conversation with PBS, we're in conversation with ABC, and we're really hoping to also to work with Netflix for a larger reach. And the idea would be, people would watch this process, and we know from social science research on a theory called proxy dialogue, that if I'm watching this video and I have an emotional identification with one of the people that I'm watching, and I get really, it's compelling to me, I can actually go through the same attitude change that I saw her go through. And in some contexts where there's been the capability of researching it, sometimes it even goes to a behavior change. So people often ask me, well, so what happened to those 24 people?
Right. Where are they now? Right. I love that. Oprah does that, a guest 10 years ago. Where are they now? What happened, Carolyn?
So we've just recently finished. In fact, we're not quite finished, so the number may get even higher. But of the 12 millennial people that actually worked with us in Chicago, six of them have completely changed their lives. They always had an idea of something they wanted to do that was more socially active. I'll give you some examples. A young Hispanic man from Milwaukee named Cesar. He actually has just been hired as the social justice grassroots organizer for the Unitarian Church for all of Wisconsin.
Got to be kidding.
A young black man from Chicago
yes.
named Ernest ran for city council. When he ran shortly after we did this, he did it as a write-in. Of course, in that context, he didn't win.
But it doesn't matter.
And he's now building a field organization to run again. A lovely young woman named Kadisha, who was working in corporate America, very, very successful, was so taken by the power of what we were doing with video that part of her family lived in New Jersey. She moved to New Jersey, began to work the offices in New York, and she will soon have a full-time position with a production company in New York. Another young woman whose passion was recycling. She had learned from a different community in a different part of Illinois a particular way that a locality could get more people engaged, but they needed support from City Hall. So she went back and organized people in her own neighborhood and near neighborhoods and got a grant from the City Council of Chicago to institute this recycling program. So not only did that change how they now relate with people who they see as different than they are, one of the things that touches my heart the most deeply is it gave them the sense of courage to engage in our society on the issues they cared the most about.
It changed the trajectory of their lives. I mean, that's real. And what I know in this business now and why I love the stories you're telling, people want to hear stories more than a lecture, more than a process, more than a PowerPoint. And that if that PowerPoint contains relevant stories, and these are stories about real people, and it's got to make you feel so affirmed in terms of the impact from a docuseries. And of course, the platform. If the visual platform is so powerful now, even for us, we're starting to put more on YouTube for every podcast we do, because people do like to listen in their cars, but YouTube is the second largest search engine, so you can't ignore YouTube. So that makes me really happy, and it makes me think there will be a tipping point someday.
So I hope your listeners will actually go. We have a website. It's www.dividedwefalltv.org. And there they can meet all the members that I've just described, both the people from Boston and the people from Chicago. We hope next to do an urban-rural divide, either in Colorado or in North Carolina. And if your listeners go there and they like what they see, what we would love is if they would actually like us on their Facebook pages, because one of our other goals is to become one of the Facebook channels that, in fact, Facebook itself pushes out every time we put up a video. But we have to get to a threshold number.
I know. It's all about the
exactly.
algorithms. I mean,
exactly.
It does. But the thing is, I always have to say this because Kelly is like sitting on my shoulder here reminding everybody, a lot of people listen to us on the treadmill. They listen to us when they're driving. If you go to our website when this podcast is posted, that link will be on our show page, because any links that are mentioned and how to get to your website and all that, anything we mention, Kelly's really good. She listens to every show and then she'll put a link on, because this will create, like you said, scale. We've got to get this to scale.
That
learn
is the goal.
Learn how to really have it reach a tipping point.
So another website that your listeners should, all the work that we've done with legislators and with the public, the tools we've created, the discussion guides, if they go to www.revivecivility.org, they can download this and do it themselves.
And I have people in mind that I know will do that because they listen to every podcast and they let me know and I get comments. So we have, like I said, a really, I would call it a wonderful, strong, faithful, and growing tribe.
Do you know, I really should share a new initiative on the Revive Civility side, because faith-based organizations are really taking very seriously their role.
Yes.
In moral leadership.
Yes.
To reconnect Americans.
And in climate change.
Exactly. So we've created an initiative by working through about 28 leaders of various denominations called Golden Rule 2020. And this is, you'll find that on our Revive Civility website. And the idea is congregations all over the United States are going to pick November 3rd, 2019, which just happens to be exactly 1 year before the 2020 election.
Got it.
To, as a congregation, make some commitments about how they themselves will hold the golden rule as a standard for treating others as they want to be treated, and how they will actually hold elected officials, local, state, and national, to also make a commitment about the Golden Rule 2020.
You know, there again, I am telling you, it's like, wow, there's more good news. Must have missed that on the nightly news too, which is why I actually don't listen to nightly news. I am a big fan of Lester Holt because he always ends with a positive story. He doesn't dwell and have all these experts ad nauseum dissecting blah, 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 blah. I'm so over that. What about another new project, Common Sense America?
Well, this is very exciting. Keith Allred, who actually joined us this year, had done a pilot in Idaho called Common Interest Idaho. And this is a completely web-based process where Americans can become a member of Common Sense American. And at this point, there are 8 or 9 policy issues, all of which are really being looked at seriously in Congress, that the people who are members of Common Sense American can actually weigh in their view. One is what's happening to so many Americans, just for the example of going for a hospital stay and all of a sudden receiving a bill that is a complete surprise and out of the context of their plan. Well, there's an easy fix to this that both Republican members and Democrat members of Congress have been interested in for quite some time. Another idea is Pell Grants that we've had in the country for years, of recognizing that not every talented, bright young person is going on to college.
Right.
So why not allow Pell Grants to be available for technical schools?
Oh my God, in the trades?
Exactly. So these are we're not trying to take on the big issue like solving immigration, but really, Keith likes to call them small bore issues for which there is a current solution. So if your listeners will go to www.commonsenseamerican, if you become a member, all you have to commit to is 90 minutes a year to read the issue papers. For example, the Pell Grants. Up on the website, there are all the pros and all the cons about this issue. And you then, as an American, weigh in on what you believe Congress should do. It's very exciting.
So you have to be like, whereas sometimes I'm thinking this is the darkest day, you're in a sphere of influence that is really fighting every day for the greater good and to find that I want to have hope. I don't want to die sad. I say that. I don't want to die like anytime soon anyway. Let's do that disclaimer. But I don't want to be, I'm sad a lot. And I never used that word before, even to the point of, yes, I'm sad about who we have as president. I'm clearly very sad, and I admit that. But I'm sad about what has happened to our country, and I don't want it to last. And when you talked about 2012, in the big picture, that was like yesterday, and yet it was 1,000 years ago when you look at the behavior and the polarity and all of those things that we have now. So I was very sincere when I pounced on you about this is what we need. I want our platform to be a way that if we have, you know, 50, 60, 70,000 more listeners, that they'll share the podcast and click on some of those links, because you gave us a lot of calls to action. And like I said, if you're finding my podcast and you're staying signed up, it's because you care about the content and you know that we have great guests and they then take action. We have things that really, really come and happen. Is there anything that we forgot? Because that was a lot. We covered a lot. There's an absorption rate, and I love everything that you've said, but I don't want to get off the air and say, oh, we never covered this.
I'd like to say two things in closing, if you don't mind,
Gina. No, I don't mind at all.
What you've just spoken about of how the mass media that we as Americans are bombarded with all of the time do always push the negative side. So finding a place to find the places of hope.
Yes.
So this is not an initiative that we're leading, but a lot of democracy reform organizations have come together and have created an online news outlet called The Fulcrum. And The Fulcrum, just thefulcrum.org, is dedicated to sharing the positive stories that are being done by organizations like ours. So this is a place that people who want to have access on a regular basis to, whether it's about redistricting, whether it's about money in politics, whether it's about civility, whether it's about what the faith-based community is doing. But The Fulcrum is doing stories every day that actually do create hope.
I love that you shared that with us. I love that. And what was the second one?
Well, recently NPR did a series on civility, and they did 7 shows. And our work was the last show, and we were very humbled and proud that they picked us because they saw us as an antidote to the incivility that's happening. And the reporter that interviewed me for the show, we'd talked about 45 minutes. And at the end, she kind of took off her journalist hat and basically said to me, you know, Carolyn, you've been doing this a very long time. How do you honestly feel about this?
Are you optimistic? I love that question.
Or are you pessimistic about our ability to get out of where we are? And frankly, Gina, my response came to me in a nanosecond. And I hope this is helpful to your listeners. I said to her, it all depends on what I pay attention to. If I focus my attention on what's happening in Congress in terms of the dysfunction, on the president's tweets, on the 24/7 news cycle, I'm very pessimistic. We're not going to get out of this in terms of leadership from that set of institutions. And it's only going to get worse between now and the 2020 election. So if that's where I focus my attention, I am very pessimistic. But if I focus my attention on what we discover Americans are doing themselves in every community that we visit. The story I told you about Sarah and Troy, a young woman in Cleveland, Ohio named Megan Anderson, who was so concerned about this divisiveness that she started a project called Craft Beer in Conversation. And every Friday night, she and her colleagues go to a different bar. And this is taking off into other cities. My point is, I could tell you 100 stories like that.
Good news stories.
And if I put my attention on what we the people are doing and what a lot of organizations, NICD and its collaborative partners are doing, I am incredibly optimistic. America has been in serious trouble before, and we have managed to get out of it by the commitment of the American people ourselves.
And I have to believe that spirit will never die. Even there's a parallel when we pulled out of the Paris Accord for climate change. Look at what governors did. I'm pretty sure it was in 40 states. They said, well, that's all well and good, but we're in. And mayors all around the country said, no, this isn't political. This is the survival of the citizens that I represent. So that news we have to focus on. And to your point, Carolyn, if we stopped tuning into all of those shows, they wouldn't be as popular, they wouldn't be as well funded by sponsors, and things like Fulcrum, which you can be sure I'm going to look up, to just feed my joy side will be important to our future. So I'm really glad that you shared that with me. And everything that you're doing, and I'm going to come see you when I come to Washington, D.C. in April. And
please
I mean
do.
It. Okay, so now my last word. I did hear Carolyn speak at a Salon Series in Tucson, and I really did pounce on her. I wanted to hear more. I wanted to read more. I wanted to learn more because I know that I am part of the problem when it comes to certain issues. The National Institute for Civil Discourse wants to do and does help people like me who want to know better and do better and be kind to people, all people. I want to find that common ground when it comes to the climate crisis. I want all citizens of the planet to be pulling in the right direction when it comes to the preservation of this great planet of ours. I want to be the change that I wish to see in the world, and I will continue to do the work I need to do to make that happen. I hope beyond measure that we can once again become a strong, civil, agree-to-disagree two-party system of government that is based on respect and compromise with the intention of making our country stronger, because I do believe that the whole is greater than the sum of the parts. If I have any hope at all, I can honestly say it's because of the work of important institutions like this, and I am committed to finding ways to stay engaged, because to me, America is worth it. So, Carolyn, thank you for taking the time to be with us on your vacation and to come in and spend this time with us, because your message is really one of the most important that I think America has to hear. So thank you for doing that.
Well, Gina, thank you so much for having me.
And it was fun.
It was fun.
Okay, thanks, everybody. Listen, go to those websites, get engaged, and be a sign for hope, because we all need it. It's what you feed, and let's feed our hope side.